Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on the show today. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. Suit encounter. No, that's not an insurance. Probably need it, though. They do a great job of doing everything they can to make sure you're fully insured and save you money in the process, if at all possible. All at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Todd, good day to you.
Good afternoon to you, sir.
Doing well. John Griffin on the show today. We'll talk with him about everything that's going on with Bucknell basketball and get you ready for the coming week. So we have a lot going on there. And, it's Super Bowl week. We will close the week out with the King, and we will go through prop bets. Yes. Nothing like the props. We do that every year. Because they're always just for the fun of it. I mean, none of us put any money on it. Well, obviously, suit the Greek in the corner office. I mean, he bets on Little League games. All right, so he scares me. Does he worry you? Yeah, you're around him more than I am, so.
Depends on the day.
Let's face it, anybody that works there, it's every day. All right, so. But it depends on the day. Like Saturday and Sunday, not there. I feel better. All right. So that is what we have coming up this week. We'll have fun with that. We always have fun with the props on Friday before the Super Bowl. Now, today is the day that Roger Goodell is meeting with the media. Here's the problem I have with it, and there's a problem with this. What he's doing today, at least in my opinion. The commissioner used to meet with the media on Friday before the Super Bowl. Now, why was that great? Because guess what? Everybody who would be covering the game was in town. Right? It's Friday. They were there. Because guess what? Some people don't show up on Sunday. They show up on Wednesday. They show up on Thursday, whatever it may be. Okay? Then they moved it to Wednesday. Okay. So they move it to Wednesday. Well, guess what? It's going to be today. And not only is it today, it's going to be invitation only. Invitation only? Really? You're the commissioner of a multi-billion dollar industry. And it's invitation only. I'll give you an example who didn't get an invitation. Mike Florio of NBC did not get one. See, there's stuff like that. Like, I mean, Todd, you're in this, right? If you were told it was invitation only and you didn't get one, what would your thought be?
I was doing my job right.
Yeah. I don't get what he's doing here. First of all, it's not as if he's bad at doing press conferences. He's fine. Some people are just not good at it, at doing a press conference. I mean, some people just aren't good at it. He's not one of them. He's all right. He does fine at it. And, I mean, Mike Florio reported last week that his State of the NFL press conference, which is now a Monday, is invitation only. That means that some media members will be unable to attend. All right? I don't get this at all. He signed a contract extension last fall. And he is making, he reportedly earned $63.9 million for 2019-2020 and 2021. It's a lot of cash, man. Now, has he earned it? Yeah, he's earned it. You want to know why? When you're the one negotiating media deals that are worth billions per year, I mean billions per year, not a billion per year, billions per year, and you're making 32 other entities, organizations richer for it, right? You are earning your money. Okay? You're earning it. Okay? And also the fact they got labor peace out of it. Now, they barely got labor peace. They barely got it. The average per team, when they passed the labor agreement, was the average of 32 to 30 per team. That's how close the vote was. He could never have been able to get the TV deal without that vote. He had to do it one at a time. All right. Now, last 2 years, and especially last year, he received a question from Jim Trotter. Trotter at that point was a member of NFL Network. And he asked the commissioner about the lack of diversity among head coaches, front office positions, and at NFL Media. Okay? And he stumbled through the question. Now, Trotter's no longer employed by NFL Network. He is suing the league, claiming his contract was not renewed as a retaliation for asking Goodell about the league's commitment to diversity. Now, the NFL, of course, let's face it, nobody likes to be public shaming. The only entity that we know that seems to roll with public shaming is the suit. But that's just now. It's because of this show. We're relentless. McGranahan does. Well, McGranahan's getting close, I can tell you. No, I'm just kidding. But now they come up with this. Okay? It's okay to ask questions about what's going on and to get answers. It's all right. Right? What about the diversity? Okay, you know the question's going to come up. Point to areas of diversity within the hiring of the NFL and the progress that has been made over the last 5, 10, 15, 20 years, that the Rooney Rule needs to have a little bit more to it, and you just can't interview somebody just for the sake of fulfilling the rule. But there are successes to be pointed to. Look at all the coordinators that have been hired along the way. I mean, now, for every Alex Van Pelt, there's an Eric Bieniemy being hired by somebody. You know what I mean? It's better, and that's how he needed to answer it. But I don't understand why. As an entity, as a commissioner who's good, I mean, he is good at dealing with the media. He's good at dealing with the media. He's never had a problem dealing with the media. Right, and for the most part, the NFL's on a roll. Right now, what would be a question that, from a fan point of view, okay? You saw 23 million view the Chiefs-Dolphins game. Other games ended up getting 45, 50, and 55 million. Two-part question. How did you feel about streaming with 23 million? And are you concerned that you cut off the possibility of seeing it to 27 to 30 million other people when you're trying to grow the game? What's wrong with that question? He can answer that. Okay, that's a fan question.
It's to control the message, obviously, but I don't know what message needs to be controlled by the NFL at this point.
I mean, it's not as if the NFL has, okay, you've got, all right, the NFL was on a roll a few years ago. I mean, let's go back, I don't know, 10, 11 years ago. They were on a roll. And then the Ray Rice thing came up. And the NFL was put on its heels by it because, what did they suspended him for 2 games? I think.
Yeah, it wasn't very long.
Right? And everybody's like, and then people saw the video and went, yo, what are you doing? Which was then followed by the Adrian Peterson incident. Right? And the NFL was kind of rocked a little bit for a period of time. And it just seemed like to that point, they were in such a roll, they could do no wrong. In the end, that coupled with a couple of other decisions that they made knocked the ratings back like 7-8%. But in the last few years, my goodness, they are rolling. I mean, Sunday Night Football gets ratings with, puts them of the top 20 programs, all 17 are in the top 20 programs on a regular weekly basis. All of them are. Right? They've done a good job with streaming up with Amazon, going from 9.7 million up to 12.1 million this year in streaming. That's a big plus. So they're on an absolute roll. They've got labor peace for 9 more years. They've got TV deals for 9 more years. They're doing not well. They're doing great. Nobody is doing what they're doing right now. Nobody has more impact on live TV than the NFL does. That's why the Peacock thing was a little disconcerting, because that was pushed by the league, not NBC. I mean, the league pushed that. And they believe that streaming is the future. Okay, you're already streaming. You've got Amazon on Thursdays. This game is going to be on Nickelodeon. I believe it's on Paramount Plus, and it's going to be on CBS. That's how you stream. You use it as a supplement for those who don't have the network. That's how you use streaming. And as time goes, maybe it becomes the more dominant, but you have to transition into it. All right? And that's how you do it. You don't force it down everybody's throats. And that's where, to me, the NFL made the power play move on the Dolphins-Chiefs thing. And yes, 23 million watch. And yes, I watched. And you watched. All right? To be honest with you, if family members had not wanted to watch the Chargers-Bills game, and I forgot that Peacock was still on my TV, I'm like, oh, I guess I still have it. So I watched. I mean, you watched it, right?
I did.
Yeah.
I didn't have, you know, it's one of those things. I wasn't going to do it and wasn't going to do it, but then it was really cold and it looked like it was going to be interesting, so I did it.
Right. No, it would. I mean, the weather was absolutely conducive to watching. It was a Saturday night. The whole country is below zero. Well, it felt like it. Right? The entire country's in the deep freeze. Kansas City was below zero. It was like watching a game on the moon. And, you know, they did get 23 million to watch. But then you see the subsequent ratings of the other games, 40 million, 45 million. And the two conference championship games were both over 50 million viewers. So you feel in the end that a Dolphins-Chiefs game that had a lot of appeal to it, that you missed out on, you backhanded 27 million viewers and said, nah, unless you do it our way, you're not watching. That's a question you ask the commissioner. What's your message to the 27 million viewers that actually said no to watching the game on Peacock that you could have had watching your product at this particular time? What's your message to them? What's wrong with that question? Right? That's a fan question.
I also feel like if that's the hardest question you're going to get in a press conference, that's probably a fairly easy press conference, too.
Yeah, but it's something that it affects the fan.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, in other words, okay, if I'm going to be a conduit between the fan and the game, which is what, in my opinion, reporters should be, then it's okay to ask a fan-related question that speaks for them. What are you saying to the 27 million potential viewers that could have watched that game that looked around and said, I'm not doing this? What's your message to them? You're going to force, or is it to force them to do it? Right? Because these contracts, I mean, and the follow-up is you're going to do it every year.
Sounded like, at least in the couple days after that game in January, that they were pleased with those numbers. So
yeah, right, exactly. Right, and you're still cutting off half your viewership. You're cutting off half your viewership doing it. Okay, in a business model, that's not the business model I want. You could have had the game on NBC and have the supplement be Peacock. Okay, supplementing with streaming is brilliant. Right? And that, to me, that's where you get the maximum number of eyeballs on your product instead of forcing the eyeballs to a product. All right, we'll take a break. Come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to be with you on the show today, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, and Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I believe what Shikellamy picked up a big basketball win over the weekend, right? I think they did, right?
Yeah. They did win this weekend. They beat Jersey Shore.
Yeah. So that's great. That's, you know, terrific win, and they've picked up some pretty good wins over time here.
Yeah, they've done real well, other than losing to the to Selins Grove and Shamokin in back-to-back games, in which they were in both games and probably feel like they should have won. They've been playing real well the second half of the season.
By the way, speaking of losing back-to-back games, Kentucky basketball in its history has lost back-to-back home games only 8 times. Can you believe that? 8 times. Yet it's happened of those 8, 3 of the last 4 years, including this year.
Their defense was awful on Saturday night for the amount I watched of it.
I mean, Todd, that's been their problem. Offensively, they have some beautiful offensive players on that team, especially Dillingham. They can score. The problem is, and you look at John's really good teams, I don't care whether it was UMass or Kentucky, his really good teams were excellent defensively. The last 5 years, last 4 years in particular, their defense at Kentucky has really struggled. And this year it's really struggling. And that's a big problem for them. That's why they gave up 103 the other night to Tennessee at home. Not good. And that's been a crusher for them.
I've watched them twice this year, and neither game have not impressed with them defensively. Offensively,
right.
Yes.
Right. Give college basketball credit. Great matchups all weekend.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Sponsored by Prudy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV, whatever it may be, they'll do everything they can to make you fully insured and also do whatever they can to save you money. That includes bundles, whatever it may be. Customer service means everything to the great people at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Joined now by the outstanding basketball coach at Bucknell, John Griffin. Griff, how are you?
I'm good, Steve. How you doing? Outstanding is quite the compliment that is not deserved right now. We're just regular John, people over here in Lewisburg.
Yeah, I got it. But you know what? I look at you and I see a lot. So that's just me.
I appreciate it.
You get a split last week, and it's one of those tough splits because you lose the loss was in overtime. So in that game against American, you're down 14 with about 16 and a half to play. What did your team then show you to then not only get back but actually take a lead late in the game? Because that's the toughest part, is getting over the hump.
Yeah, I mean, it shows that they have the attitude that we're, you know, honestly building towards every day. So we try not to be a result-driven group. We talk about the idea of being a process-oriented group pretty regularly, and American is playing good basketball right now. So we knew the game was going to be a tough one, and the group is building a competitiveness internally that, you know, I really don't have to tap into throughout the course of a game. They just keep kind of playing. We had a couple good sequences defensively that led to opportunities for us offensively. And today's world of college basketball, it's not uncommon to see 8-0 runs, 7-0 runs, 10-0 runs. And quite frankly, actually, as it relates to the idea of runs, there's enough statistical evidence right now that's being studied in the world of college basketball. Let's say, like, the best teams in the country have the most 8-0 runs, and so we just stuck with it, kept competing, and it was nice to see that for our group internally, that it doesn't need to be something that the coaches preach for us to kind of get back into a game like that. They just took every possession for what it was worth, and we got back in the game.
Always an issue in any game, and we talk about this in our broadcast all the time, the ability to win the two lines. Three-point line, free throw line. In this game, you were minus 18, I think, at the three-point line. How important is that in your mindset? I know everyone talks analytics all the time, but how important is that in your mindset to win the two lines and what it can mean to success?
Well, yeah, the number that hurt us probably more than that, honestly, was the free throws.
Yep.
You know, we typically are a good free throw shooting team. We missed one to take the lead with 9 seconds, and we missed a couple leading up to that particular free throw that typically we make. You know, Jack Forrest is one of the best free throw shooters in our conference, and he missed three. And so those add up, and, you know, you lose a game in overtime, and you look at the result, you look at the end number, but there's a reason that the score in our differential in our case was 9. There's a reason it got to 9. And so, you know, our two-point percentage defense actually was really good on Saturday. And American offensively, along with Colgate, but their two-point percentage offense is the best in our league, around 57%, which is extraordinarily high. And we held them to 38%, which is extraordinarily low, which allowed us to get back into the game. So, you know, it is the great debate. What's more important? Is it the three-point line? I mean, I think the three-point line can certainly save you in some instances if you make 14. But at the same time, there's enough data that says two-point percentage has incredible value as well. And for us, really, it was more about our free throws.
Right.
We needed to win that line to win the game.
Right. But there's another element to the two-point part. If I'm scoring within 5 to 10 feet of the basket, my two-point number is going to go up. I've always felt that in this era, one of the keys is, can I get you to take the two-point shot I want you to take, which is that, you know, 17 to 20-foot two?
Yeah.
Are you, for the most part, because, I mean, look, you're a 6-4 Patriot League team right now. I mean, you're right in the thick of it. Are you getting?
Yeah, we're right in the thick of it.
You're right in the thick of it. So are you getting them to take more of the shots you want them to take as time goes?
Yeah, we are. We are. I think we've changed some things schematically where we're shifting our defenses from man-to-man to zone, and we're being a little disruptive in that regard. And so when you do that, typically at this point in the year, the end result is your opponent thinks a little bit more on the offensive end, which in that small window of thinking, the shot clock does run down, and it forces opponents to take shots they don't typically maybe prepare for offensively. And so for us, yeah, we're trying to keep the ball out of the paint as much as we possibly can. And really, we're looking for a result that is more about the type of shots, kind of what you're talking about. Nothing near the rim, three-pointers. If they're a three-pointer, maybe off the dribble instead of a catch-and-shoot, not a what in our world we call an inside-out three where it touches the paint near the rim, and then it gets kicked out to the perimeter. And at that point, the shooter's chest and shoulders and eyes are facing the rim, so it's a much higher percentage three-point shot. We're trying to avoid giving those up. And for the most part, I think we're doing a pretty decent job of that.
Noah Williamson had a career-high 28 in your win over Loyola, then came up back with another 20-point game. What are you seeing from him right now?
I mean, I'm just seeing a guy that's every opportunity that he gets to play, I'm seeing a more confident individual day by day. And, you know, he's just at the beginning stages of what he ultimately can be. He's got so much natural talent. We're tapping into that every opportunity that we can. But his confidence is growing. His comfort with physicality is growing, and he's just a really highly skilled seven-footer. I mean, really highly skilled seven-footer. Yeah. He's hitting threes. He's going off the dribble. You know, for the most part, he's making his free throws, and we just got to keep building on that and keep helping him grow as an individual offensive talent.
How important within your offense happen to be paint touches, and are you getting enough of them as you play?
Yeah, I mean, that's really important for us, for our success, because we do have enough three-point shooters that we can really keep the floor spaced, which is an advantage for us. It keeps the defense closer to our perimeter players. So we're going to have to do a better job. I didn't think we did a great job, honestly, Steve, on Saturday of getting to the paint enough in the first 20 minutes, which when you don't get to the paint, your offense can look stagnant because it goes very east and west. And in football terms, you want to get downhill.
Right,
you know, we look at the basket as the end zone. So when you're in the red zone, you got to get downhill. You got to smash mouth football, for lack of a better phrase, there, and that's what we're trying to do as well.
Yeah, Navy second time through, able to win the first time through, but out of every game there are corrections. Out of the Navy game, thinking back on that, what would you like to correct, especially going on the road?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have to clean up our rebounding. All military academies, they're very physical. Culturally, they play very hard. And they only have kind of one speed, and it's the foot on the gas. And so we're going to have to do a much better job on the weak side, rebounding and limiting them to one shot. They have a really high-level point guard who is explosive, fearless, and as I just said, really enjoys contact, which makes him pretty difficult to defend because it puts the game in the official's hands if you don't kind of approach him, you know, correctly. You know, officiating's tough these days. There's a lot of changes that happen yearly. So a player like this particular point guard, it's hard to defend. So we're going to have to rebound well, and we're going to have to do a much better job of not fouling.
And that's important because style of play means so much. Have your players done a good job for the most part of, because usually you can tell in the first 5 to 6 minutes, at least I can, how the game probably is going to be called that night. And you probably have the same feel, John. I mean, how important is it for the player? Yeah. Have they been able to adjust to that?
A little bit. I think what makes it tough is we have some bigger athletic bodies. Jack Farson is a great example. He's come from the Atlantic 10. He transferred to Bucknell. Yeah. And in the Atlantic 10, you have to have a physical ability. Like, you know, to the extent, you know, Big 10 sort of, and I kind of use Big 10 as a reference because you see it so much. But you have to have a physicality about you. And I think there's at times where that physicality works against us because he can absorb contact maybe differently than the average Patriot League player. And so for us, we're trying to find that balance in recognizing what's a foul versus what isn't going to be a foul, and that sometimes takes 20 minutes to discern. And then, you know, it's a tough balance.
It is, because what happens, at least to me, now you tell me if I'm wrong about this, is that if a guy has a reputation of the ability to absorb contact, they don't give him the same leeway as the guy that can't. That's what I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there is body types that absorb physicality differently. So
yes.
You constantly see it in the NBA levels where a LeBron James is going to absorb contact differently than Steph Curry. Now, that doesn't mean it's not a foul.
Right, exactly.
A foul is a foul. So I think sometimes absorbing the contact without any maybe disadvantage ultimately gives a disadvantage to the more physical player.
All right, so this will be a tougher question maybe to answer, but it's about officiating. You've moved that chair over where you're now in the head coaching spot. How have you felt like you have dealt with officials since you're the one that actually has to do it now as opposed to the other chair?
Ah, that's a tough one. I mean,
that's a tough question.
I
know it is.
The reason I say it's tough, I'm a Philly guy, you know, so I, like all Philadelphians, wear our hearts on our sleeve, you know. We're an emotional bunch. So I think that I'm trying to be fair. If there's anything that I can say is I recognize that being an official is a tough job right now due to, you know, social media and constant evaluations publicly. What's the correct call? You watch an NFL football game right now, they're going to Gene pretty regularly.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it so tough.
Yeah. Just thought I'd throw it in there. Sometimes that one chair.
Yeah.
It's a difficult question. You handled it perfectly. John,
yeah.
thanks so much. Hey, good luck down in Annapolis. Then you got a home game with BU this weekend. And we wish you nothing but the best of luck. Thanks so much for the great conversation.
All right, Steve, you got it. Thanks a lot.
John Griffin, a basketball coach at Bucknell. Good friend of Doug Birdsong. But isn't everybody? See, that's the difference, right? And this is where the suit is confused. Why does everybody love Doug?
Because he's personable.
On News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, Penn State basketball swept the week last week, winning at Rutgers, winning at Indiana. We've been making the point over and over on the broadcast that after losing two home games to Northwestern and Minnesota, respectively, each time with the team that won rallied to win, so Penn State had chances to win both those games, that you had to somehow get them back to keep yourself in the ball game in the conference. Well, they got them back last week. Now, of course, they've got Iowa back at home, which means that puts them back into a, hey, you got to win and make it three in a row when they play Thursday. And Iowa's coming off a loss in Indiana, 74-68, but beat Ohio State at home by two on Friday night. They can score. I mean, they are averaging 84 points a game. They can score. They have a lot of guys that can score. Defensively, it's been a struggle for Iowa at times, but they can put points up on the board, and that's what they do above all. And that will be Thursday night at 7 o'clock. But Penn State was able to win. Ace Baldwin played all 40 at Rutgers. He played all 40 at Indiana. There are a lot of questions right now as to what do you do with Kanye Clary, because they've won two games without him. First of all, he's a player that you need to have, especially in a league where there's a handful of exceptional athletes in the league. Like Carr, for example, inside's a great athletic finisher from Michigan State. Shannon, I know he's got off-the-court problems. I'm not going to get into that. But he's an exceptional athlete playing the guard-forward spot. Storr at Wisconsin is an exceptional athlete. Jones at Purdue is a different kind of athlete and player for Purdue. And then there's Kanye. There's really only a handful of guys. That's why people ask me, what's the difference between the Big Ten and other conferences? And he said, well, they said the two differences between and that hurts the Big Ten in the NCAA tournament. Number one, the Big Ten has a lot of good athletes, but not great athletes. A lot of really good athletes, but very few great athletes. And number two is how it's officiated, which they finally get into a conference into the NCAA tournament, and all of a sudden it's like, well, it wasn't a foul in my league. Well, guess what? It's a foul. And those are the issues. So Kanye is one of those exceptional athletes, the speed, the quickness that he brings to the table. And there is a difference between speed and quickness. He brings both to the table. But at the same time, you've won two games without him. Well, you'd still need him to play. And somebody asked me about it the other day, and yesterday I was asked about it, and I said, look, this is what I would do. I would show him the Minnesota game. Right? In the first half, Kanye Cleary played beautiful team basketball. 5 assists, dishing the ball off. Penn State built the lead. Right? Not so much of the team concept in the second half of the game. I said, look, see the first half here? You'll get your points. You'll score. But look how you played. Look how you made everybody around you better. In the second half, did you make people around you better? Right? And that's what I would show him. Look, this is how we've been playing. Connected, ball not sticking. The ball did not stick for Penn State the last two games. Didn't stick. Move, move, move. Motion, side to side, attacking the basket, exploiting matchups. I mean, cups on Ace Baldwin. I mean, Dick and I are watching the tape, and we're like, I'm talking about, looking at the pregame scout tapes, and we're like, okay, there are a lot of things about Gabe Cups we like, but not in a matchup against Ace Baldwin. He doesn't have the experience yet to handle how Ace plays the game at both ends. And that is something that we talk about. Well, okay, I talk about matchups all the time. A lot of people are talking analytics. To me, games are about matchups. Okay, my guy's better than your guy, or your guy's better than my guy. How do you overcome it? And that's a big part of what makes sports work. I mean, the Super Bowl's coming up. What matchups can you exploit to then swing the game one way or the other? And it's about matchups. And in the Penn State game, look, Hicks hit three-point shots, huge plus. Jameel Brown hit three-point shots, huge shots. So now let's get to numbers for a moment. Dick Girardi and I both feel strongly that it 8 out of every 10 games, and that's a conservative number, but 8 out of 10, if you win both lines statistically, free throw line and the three-point line, 8 out of 10, you're usually the winning team. Well, Penn State won the two lines by 16 points on Saturday, in part because they won the three-point line 36-15, plus 21. They were minus 5 at the free throw line. But they were plus 16. What was the final score in the game? Oh, plus 14. Amazing how that works out. Take a look at box scores, and you'll see it, I think, on a repeated basis, that winning the two lines a lot of times ends up being the margin in the game, or at least in the neighborhood of the margin in the game. Right? And they were able to do that. They hit 12 threes in the game. Huge. Hicks having a good game. He had 19. Jameel Brown, right, had 14 in the game, and he hit 4 threes in the game. It just makes such a difference. And then Wahab, to his credit, was 7 of 8 from the field against the team that has Renew and Ware. And by the way, both are impressive players. But you knew Penn State should have, on paper, the advantage at the three-point line against Indiana. Indiana did something against Illinois that in 2024 I thought was going to be impossible to do. But at Illinois the week before, they played the first half of the game and never attempted a three-point shot. Really? Now, they hit a couple in the second half. But to their credit, I give Indiana a lot of credit for this. Against Illinois, like a minute and 10 to go, they're down one with no advantage at the three-point line at all. Now, they eventually lost as, you know, Illinois hit some free throws down the stretch and won the game by 8 or 9 or something like that. So you knew Penn State should, on paper, have that advantage and did have that advantage in the game. But they played really well defensively.
Yes. You know what?
They played really well defensively in both games last week. That really helped. And they played great defense for three of the four halves they played. The first half against Indiana was a struggle defensively. Because, I mean, they just couldn't control where. And for some reason, Indiana got away from where in the second half. Because in the entire Rutgers game, and Rutgers is not a great offensive team, but Penn State still stopped them. I mean, on their home floor, they only shot 34%. And then the second half of the Indiana game played superb defense. Penn State was behind by 11, 34-23, with 5:15 to go in the first half. They outscored Indiana in Assembly Hall 62-37 over the final 25 minutes and 15 seconds. And in each of the Rutgers and Indiana games, each time when Penn State took the lead in those games, they never relinquished it.